continue to hold. Today's conference will begin shortly. Please continue to hold. The conference will begin in just a moment. Thank you. Welcome, and thank you for standing by. Your lines are in listen-only mode until today's question and answer session. At that time, if you would like to queue up to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star one on your phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objection, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Barbara Reynolds. You may begin.
Thank you, Kate. Hi, this is Barbara Reynolds. I'm with the Public Affairs Office at CDC. Welcome to CDC's update on the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome coronavirus investigation in the United States. We have one speaker this afternoon. After I introduce the speaker, he will give brief remarks and then we'll go into Q&A. And we hope we can answer as many questions as possible today in this call, and I want you to know that we will also be posting a transcript of this call as soon as possible after we finish. I'd like to now introduce Dr. David Swerdlow, who is CDC's lead on the response to the MERS-CoV investigation, and he also holds the rank of captain in the U.S. Public Health Service. Dr. Swerdlow.
Thank you so much, Barbara, and thanks everyone for joining us. When we recently announced the first two confirmed imported cases of MERS in the United States, we committed to keeping the public informed of new developments, and that is why we're having this telebriefing today. Today, we have updated information on one of the contacts of the first U.S. case of MERS, confirmed on May 2nd in a traveler from Saudi Arabia to Indiana. As you recall, the Indiana patient traveled April 24th from Saudi Arabia to Indiana via plane through London and bus from Chicago. The patient experienced increasing fever and developed respiratory symptoms on April 27th and was hospitalized on April 28th. By May 9th, he was fully recovered and was discharged. Prior to being admitted to the hospital, the Indiana patient had extended face-to-face contact on April 25th with a business associate in Illinois, and the two had another brief contact on April 26th. This business associate, who is an Illinois resident, has been identified as having evidence of apparent past infection with MERS-CoV. Before discussing details about the Illinois resident, I'll do my best to explain how we test for MERS-CoV infections. There are two main ways. We can collect a respiratory sample and use a test called PCR to determine if a patient has active infection with the virus. We can also do a blood test that looks for antibodies to MERS-CoV, which would indicate a person had previously been infected with MERS-CoV. Both types of testing were done on the Illinois resident. So, after being identified as a contact of the Indiana MERS patient, the health department began on May 3rd to monitor the Illinois resident daily. This was done because the Illinois resident had met with the Indiana MERS patient on the two different occasions I mentioned already. The health department used PCR to test respiratory samples from the person on May 5th. Those tests were negative. Again, this test can detect the virus in a person who has active infection with MERS-CoV. Public health officials are collecting blood samples from people who were identified as close contacts of the original Indiana MERS patient. For the Illinois resident, we learned last night that the test result was positive at CDC, showing that he has antibodies to MERS-CoV. This means he was exposed to MERS-CoV and produced an immune response to fight off infection with the virus. The Illinois resident has had no recent history of travel outside the United States. Information is still being gathered about the Illinois resident. At this time, he is reported to have had mild cold-like symptoms, but he did not seek or require medical care since exposure to the Indiana MERS patient. He is currently reported to be feeling well. Public health officials have advised him to remain in self-isolation until further tests are completed. Self-isolation means staying away from other people or wearing a mask. The investigation of the first case of MERS in the United States that was previously reported from Indiana has been very aggressive. CDC has tested more than 50 people who were identified during the contact investigation of the Indiana MERS patient, and none of them have tested positive for active infection with MERS-CoV. We are early in the process of testing these people for evidence of past infection. This aggressive approach was intended not only to ensure public safety, but to learn more about how the virus is transmitted and to help the global scientific community gain a better understanding of the virus as well. The investigation of the Indiana MERS patient is not finished. This preliminary finding will extend our investigation. Just as we did with the investigation of the patient in Indiana, we will be contacting, testing, and monitoring people who had close contact with the Illinois resident. The situation is still evolving, and more results this week are expected on contact investigations that are already underway. As CDC gathers additional information, we will consider the implications of these findings and update our recommendations when appropriate. At this time, our recommendations to the public, travelers, and healthcare providers have not changed. For the general public, CDC routinely advises that people help protect themselves from respiratory illnesses by taking everyday preventive actions like washing their hands often, avoiding touching their face with unwashed hands, avoiding close contact with people who appear sick, and disinfecting frequently touched surfaces. For travelers, at this time, CDC does not recommend that anyone change their travel plans. If you are traveling to countries in or near the Arabian Peninsula, CDC recommends that you pay attention to your health during and after your trip. The CDC travel notice for MERS-CoV was upgraded to a level 2 alert. The travel notice advises people traveling to the Arabian Peninsula for healthcare work to follow CDC's recommendations for infection control, and other travelers to the Arabian Peninsula to take general steps to protect their health. healthcare professionals should evaluate patients for MERS-CoV infection who have fever and pneumonia or acute respiratory distress syndrome and either a history of travel from country in or near the Arabian Peninsula within 14 days before symptom onset, or have had close contact with a symptomatic traveler who developed fever and acute respiratory illness, but not necessarily pneumonia, within 14 days after traveling from countries in or near the Arabian Peninsula, or are part of a cluster of patients with severe acute respiratory illness of unknown etiology in which MERS-CoV is being evaluated. They should also evaluate, in consultation with state and local health departments, anyone who has had close contact with a confirmed or probable case of MERS while the person was ill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Swerdlow. Kate, if you would like, we'll go ahead and open up for questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please unmute your line and press star 1. You will be prompted to record your name. Please record your name and your affiliation. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. If you would like to withdraw your question from the queue, you may press star 2. One moment for our first question. The first question is from Elizabeth Weiss. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. So we have an Illinois resident who was exposed to the MERS virus, produced an immune response, and has tested positive via a blood test. Are you saying that this person had MERS? And second question, is there any reason to think that he might have been exposed anywhere but via the Indiana resident? Had he ever been to Saudi Arabia? You said he hadn't traveled outside of the country, but is there any reason to think he might have been exposed in some other way? And does that make him the third MERS case in the United States?
Well, thank you very much for that question. We think that this patient was likely infected with MERS, but technically he doesn't count as an official case of MERS, because the World Health Organization, which decides what the official case definition of MERS is, does not include this type of antibody testing as criteria for being a case of MERS. Mm-hmm. In order to be a case of MERS, you need to have evidence of the actual virus detected, and that would be with a PCR test. So although we think that this patient was likely infected and had a past infection with MERS, it's not actually being called an official case of MERS. Your second question is, we are not aware of any other previous travel to an area where MERS is occurring. So we think it is most likely that this person's exposure was to the Indiana patient.
Thank you.
The next question is from Caleb Hillerman. Your line is open.
Hey, thank you for taking the question. One question I have is, you said he had extended face-to-face contact with the gentleman who had, the healthcare worker from Saudi Arabia. What does that mean? And does that mean, what kind of contact would that mean? And does that at all change the way you're thinking is of what type of exposure would potentially cause an infection? I'm also curious how many other people may have had similar contact with this guy who have been tested.
Thank you for those questions. When we did the investigation of the Indiana patient, we looked into all possible close contacts of the Indiana patient, and we determined that there were 53 healthcare workers, 6 household members, and this one business associate that we considered to be close contact. So he did fall into our definition of a close contact, and so this doesn't necessarily change our interpretation of who can get MERS from other people.
Well, thank you. And that answers both my questions. I appreciate it.
Okay, next question, Kate.
Again, if you would like to queue up to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name and affiliation when prompted. One moment for our next question. The next question is from Mike Stobie. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking the question. I'd love a little more detail about this contact. Could you say what kind of business meeting it was? Was it a job interview? Was it, how long was it? Was it an hour, 3 hours? Could you say where in Illinois? Was it in Chicago? And I'd like to better understand the chronology. Some of the initial reports of the Indiana case, you might have assumed that the guy got off a plane, got on a bus, and went right to Munster, but now it sounds like maybe he was in Illinois for a couple days before going to Munster. Do you mind clarifying that?
No, nothing has changed about our initial evaluation of where the Indiana patient had been. All the original information about the airplanes and the bus are all still correct. This gentleman the Indiana patient, traveled in a car to have a business meeting with this gentleman in Illinois from Indiana. So it doesn't change anything about the conveyances or the buses or the airplanes. And he did have a business meeting with the business associate and had face-to-face contact enough that we were concerned and included this person in our circle of people that we were monitoring, testing, and also considering for avoiding contact with other people.
How long was the meeting?
It was about 40 minutes.
And was it in Chicago or where in Illinois?
I can't really divulge that kind of confidential information for confidentiality reasons.
And can you just say the nature of the meeting? Was it?
It was a business meeting.
Question. Next question, please.
The next question is from Rich Besser. Your line is open.
Hi, Dave. Can you talk a little bit about what symptoms the Indiana patient was having at the time of the meeting, and does it change anything you're thinking about whether people can transmit before they're very symptomatic?
The Indiana patient was reported to have already been having fever and myalgias and not feeling well. So we don't really know exactly, you know, when people transmit this virus. We would love to learn more, and we are looking into ways to try to learn more. But we don't know exactly when people transmit it. We do know that the Indiana patient was having symptoms at the time of the interaction.
Was he having cough, any respiratory symptoms?
Not that we're aware of.
And you were saying that the Illinois person had symptoms of a cold. Are you thinking that was MERS or something unrelated?
Well, we don't really know a lot of details about the symptoms that the Illinois patient and the Illinois resident had. There has been some discussion about whether it could have just been allergies. It was very mild, and it did not require any visit to a health care facility or hospitalization or anything like that. And he is doing perfectly well right now. We do know that for certain.
Thanks very much.
Okay. Kate, could we get the next question, please?
Next question is from Lisa Schnering. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Are you able to say if the patient had any underlying health conditions or the age? And the second part of my question is, do you know if other countries are doing the serology tests on contacts like that? It's really seems like a vital piece of information to know, and just wondering if you had any info about that.
Yeah, thanks. I really can't discuss his age, of course, but he appears to be fairly healthy. And then in terms of other countries, the serologic test is being done in some other countries, such as in the Netherlands, but not in you know, Saudi Arabia at this time.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Kate. Next question, please.
The next question is from Julie Steenhausen. Your line is open.
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, push a little bit on this. I mean, clearly this patient has antibodies for MERS, and most, you know, under most normal circumstances, one would say that is evidence of having had MERS. You know, you and I talked earlier this week, you guys did a study on patients in Jordan and considered them to have had MERS because of they had the serologic test. Are you going to go back to the World Health Organization and ask for, you know, I mean, does this just mean that our understanding of the virus hasn't yet, you know, that the WHO's classifications haven't yet caught up with, you know, the science on this virus at this time? Because it strikes me that this is the first non-imported case of MERS. This was transmitted on U.S. soil. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, we are going to be in discussions with WHO and to discuss the possibility of including serology. The problem is that other countries have different serologies than ours, and it's a little hard to standardize. But we are going to be in discussions with WHO.
Thank you.
The next question is from Rob Stein. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks very much for taking my question. Two questions. One was those cold-like or allergy symptoms that this patient had, when did they occur exactly? And also, I was wondering if this was an asymptomatic case where there's somebody got infected and didn't get sick, does that change your sense of how dangerous this virus is and that there might be a lot of people who get exposed and don't ever get sick?
Yeah, we think that this gentleman's, whether this was a cold or allergies, occurred after the 14 days incubation period. So it may or may not have been have any association with his antibody positivity. You know, as you know, when MERS was first reported, most people had very severe illnesses, and many people died, and many of those people had underlying conditions. But we're certainly learning now that there can be a much broader spectrum of illness with MERS. And we know just from reports from Saudi Arabia and from United Arab Emirates and other countries that at least 20% of the patients that they're reporting have not had any symptoms, so are asymptomatic. So it's not surprising that we would identify an asymptomatic or a person without symptoms in the U.S. either. Clearly, there's a much broader range of illness than we originally recognized with this virus, mainly because only people who had very severe illnesses were being tested.
Thank you. And so just what would be the message to the public about this particular case? Should people be, how concerned should people be about this, that somebody else might have gotten infected?
Yeah, we don't think that this really changes the risk to the general public or have any significant changes to our public health practice. You know, if we see another case, we will probably do some similar types of investigation just so that we can learn more about how the virus is spread and who the virus is spread to. So we certainly want to inform about what we found out from this investigation, but it doesn't mean that we think that there has been a general change in risk to the population.
Great. And just to be clear, this person is no longer experiencing even those mild symptoms, right? He's totally fine right now.
That is correct.
Oh, can you say whether it's a man or a woman?
He was a gentleman. He was a male.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from Helen Branswell with Canadian Press. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my question. I have a couple, if you don't mind. One, is there any evidence that anyone who would be considered a close contact of the Illinois man is displaying any symptoms that one might think are MERS-like and at this time and or at this time or since he was exposed? And secondly, I'd like to push a bit on this question about whether this actually changes our understanding of how this virus spreads. Up until now, the message has really been it doesn't transmit well person to person. It transmits in hospitals where you've got vulnerable people and procedures that put people at high risk, and in household settings where you have close contact. A business meeting is not typically close contact. I kind of don't, I can't get my head around how meeting somebody at a business meeting is the same as caring for somebody in a household. And one last thing, if I could, given that this person, the Indiana man, was a doctor, is his business contact a healthcare professional?
Okay, so the last one, I can't reveal his business, what business he is. In terms of close. We are doing the same things for the Illinois patient that we did for the other patients, for the Illinois gentleman that we did for the Indiana patient and the Florida patient. So we are looking to see what kind of close contacts he had. We are monitoring them, we are testing them, and we are asking them to self-isolate. So we are treating the situation the same for now until we have more information. So we have not changed our approach between the Illinois resident and the Indiana and the Florida patients. So in terms of does this change our understanding that this virus, I mean, for a long time we've known that this virus can be transmitted to human to human. We've never said it can't be transmitted human to human. We've just said that it doesn't do so easily or does so in a sustained way. And I don't think that this significantly changes our understanding. You know, when there is a traveler back to France, to the Great Britain, to Tunisia, there were always some limited human-to-human transmissions, but no generalized sustained transmission. And so then, given that we have looked at, you know, even in the Indiana case, we've looked at almost, you know, more than 60 people, and there's no evidence of severe infections. There's no people who are hospitalized. There's no people who have likely cases of MERS. In the Florida case, we've looked at even more people. I don't think that this changes our understanding. It may be that, as before, an occasional human-to-human transmission may occur, but it's not sustained transmission, and it's certainly not easy transmission.
Can I just follow up on that, please? You mentioned the UK cluster and one of the others. In the case of the UK cluster, the index case went to see his dying son and transmitted, and that's how it took off. So that person was probably both exposed to the second patient for a long time and also in close quarters, and the man was quite vulnerable. In a lot of the case in France, an index patient was sharing a room with somebody, and that's how it transmitted. Those are different scenarios than sitting across a table from somebody, either at a business lunch or whatever this was. I mean, you don't see this as different?
Well, you know, we don't understand a lot about how this virus is transmitted, and that is exactly why when we approached the Indiana patient and the Florida patient that we cast a wide net and tried to really understand more about transmission, and that's why we tested healthcare workers, and that's why we tested household contacts, and that's why we are even looking into people on the airplanes and buses. This is exactly why we're doing this kind of investigation, to learn more. I still don't think that we have any evidence that this virus is easily transmitted or can be transmitted in a sustained way.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Next question is from Janelle. Alicia, your line is open.
Oh, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. So I want to confirm, and did you tell Mike that these two, the Indiana patient and the Illinois patient, were in a car together for several hours? Is that right?
No, I'm sorry. It is all a little confusing. But the Indiana patient drove from where he had stopped in Indiana back to Illinois to have a business meeting.
Okay, and so to that point, people, you know, the public thinks of close contact, as Helen pointed out, as close contact. And so this issue of sitting across from someone at a business meeting, I was thinking if he was in a car, okay, that qualifies as close contact. But this it seems much more like casual contact. And so how do we explain that to the public, that you could be in a business meeting with someone? That seems like it will be a little more worrisome.
Well, this person had, you know, face-to-face, close contact within 6 feet for, you know, over 30, 40 minutes. Again, we are trying to learn more about how this virus is transmitted, and that's why we're doing these investigations, and that's why we're reporting this.
Sure.
But again, we've had hundreds of other contacts, and at this point, certainly we'll be learning more in the future, but at this point there's no evidence of transmission. So we still don't think that this virus transmits easily, but it does transmit, and that's why we've been concerned all along.
I see. And then just one other question, if I could. So how large is the circle of contacts for the Illinois man now?
We were reviewing all persons that the Illinois gentleman had during that time period, including family members and business contacts. I have to say, I can't give exact numbers, but I have to say the number is actually very low because he was told on May 3rd to avoid contact with others. So, in fact, the number is going to be fairly low.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And can I double check one other thing? The Indiana patient, does he live here in the U.S. or does he live in Saudi Arabia?
He works in Saudi Arabia.
But he lives here. He's a resident here.
He is a U.S. citizen.
Okay, great. And I guess I'll just ask one other thing. So the question of calling it a case versus calling it, if we're not calling it the third case in the U.S., we could call it the third infection in the U.S. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, this gentleman was an apparent infection.
The first.
And
third,
the first
known.
The third
and,
known.
The third known and the first on U.S. soil.
Apparently. Again,
apparently.
You know, a big caveat about all of this is that we are retesting and we are, going to be confirming things and doing additional testing. So I did want to make sure that everyone realized that this is an ongoing investigation. Things could change. We are retesting. And so if anything changes, of course, we will let you know.
All right. Thank you. We have time for two more questions, please.
Our next question is from David O'Neill with NPR. Your line is open.
I think it must be me. I'm Joe Neal at NPR. I just have one follow-up. Is the Illinois man still on self-isolation precautions? Or do you feel confident that he's not going to develop symptoms or present a risk to anyone from here on out?
We think that the risk is very low, but we're still not taking any chances, and we are asking him to self-isolate until we have more information, until we are going to be running a couple more samples, and then we might be able to have him not have to be on self-isolation.
How long would you anticipate that might last, Dave?
Hopefully we will have another set of samples on him and the results in the next day or so, and then we can decide after that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Last question, please.
The next question is from Elizabeth Cohen with CNN. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my question. First of all, the first meeting was 40 minutes long. How long was the second meeting?
The first meeting was 30 or 40 minutes, and the second meeting was shorter.
Can you tell us how long? Shorter? 5 minutes, 30 minutes, 20 minutes?
Yeah, we were told that it was a short meeting.
Okay. And during these two meetings, did they shake hands?
Yes.
Okay. Did they hug?
I didn't ask that.
Okay. Do we know beyond shaking hands?
We can look into that more, but we were not told that he did anything other than shake hands. So I think the answer is no.
Okay, so as far as you know, shaking hands was the only actual physical contact.
Correct.
Okay. And to follow up on what Helen and others have said, you know, when I hear prolonged and close, which is what the CDC has been saying, I don't think of a 40-minute meeting, but you're saying that a 40-minute meeting in sort of your language is prolonged. That's considered prolonged.
Well, when we did the investigation, we looked into all of the contacts of the Indiana patient, and we looked at all of his interactions. And this person, because of the nature of his close contact, was included in our investigation as a close contact. We were suspicious enough in terms of his interactions that we did include him.
Right, I understand that, but is that considered prolonged? I mean, because I think a lot of us had the wrong idea. Like, a lot of us seem to think prolonged is someone you spend 8 hours at work with, prolonged is a friend you spend the day with, prolonged is a husband or a wife or a child. But it seems like prolonged can just be a 40-minute meeting across the table with nothing but a handshake. Like, that's prolonged.
Well, we know that he had, face-to-face contact. He was within 6 feet,
mm-hmm.
just for a while, and he shook hands. So, the reason we're doing these investigations is to learn more about how this virus is transmitted and how often it's transmitted, how easily it's transmitted, and that's why we're doing these investigations. And as we learn more, we will certainly let you know. And we are very committed to being able to make sure that people are protected, and that is our primary concern.
Out of the 53 healthcare workers in the 6 household contacts, how many of those have you tested?
The 53 healthcare workers, how many were tested? They were all tested by PCR twice.
And they were all negative on PCR?
Yes.
And are there any other tests that are ongoing, or is that it, like you're done?
No, we will be doing serology on them as well.
Okay. And you're in the process of that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Swerdla.
Yeah, thank you. Just in conclusion, our contact investigations indicates that there may have been some spread in the Indiana from the Indiana patient. We're still not certain of all the circumstances. We want to report as quickly as possible, but we do all need to recognize that things can change, that we will be getting more laboratory tests. We are going to continue our investigation, and we'll give you any updates as needed. There is evidence that there is a broader spectrum of illness associated with MERS than was initially thought. There can be people with no symptoms. And, of course, our most important point is that we need to be vigilant. Doctors need to know who should be considered a case, who should be tested, how they should be tested. And if you identify any possible case, the doctors need to know how to make sure that they are put in conditions of infection control where they're not able to spread the virus to anybody else. And we've also need to be sure that travelers to the region have good educational guidance and know what to look for if they become ill, and when they come back, be able to monitor themselves. So thank you very much, and we will be sure to provide any other updates when they become available.
Thank you. This concludes our update. I'd like to give you again the name and spelling for our speaker. It's Dr. David, D-A-V-I-D, Swerdlow, S-W-E-R-D-L-O-W. I also want to share that we will be posting a transcript of this briefing as quickly as possible on the CDC Media website. And if you have additional questions, you're welcome to call the CDC Media Line at 404-639-3286. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference. Thank you for your attendance. You may disconnect at this time.